The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
One of the many jewels in UW-Milwaukee's academic programs is the wide array of languages taught at the university. Students can choose from more than 20 different languages being offered. There are the mainstays, Spanish, French, Italian, Arabic and Chinese, but also Afrikaans, ancient Greek, Hmong, Russian, and many more. On this edition of UWM Today, we learn about the value of learning different languages in a world where Google Translate is just a keystroke away. Joining us in the studio is Michelle Bolduc, coordinator of the Master of Arts in Language, Literature, and Translation program at the university. Michelle is also an associate professor of French, Italian, and Comparative Literature. Welcome, Michelle. So good to have you with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
So, Michelle, the study of languages, we Americans, we are so egocentric, aren't we? Because we think everybody speaks English.
Unfortunately, too often that's the case. But I think more and more Americans are starting to understand that if you have another language, you can go very far, and not just in geographic terms, traveling to other countries, but also often in professional terms, in terms of job prospects and
And it really opens doors. I mentioned how focused we are on English, but actually a relatively small number of people in the world have English as a primary language, right?
That's right.
How
many people have English as a primary language? I wouldn't actually know.
I've heard it's less than 10%.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, but we often presume, because we do travel, that you're going to find someone who's going to speak English, but that's not necessarily the case.
Right. That's probably the case if you travel to certain countries like Denmark, where people are often trilingual already with a very good foundation in English.
So at the university, what are the more popular languages?
Well, certainly Spanish, French, German, the classical languages, but we're seeing increasing numbers of students wanting to study Portuguese, Japanese, Russian as well.
What do they get these classes in high school, or what would prompt them when they get to the university to get into that program?
I think a lot of students, when I think about the Japanese program, I think a lot of students are very influenced by manga and anime and suddenly wanting to learn the language that they associate with these forms of literature and video. In terms of Portuguese, I think it's growing because of Brazil being such an economic power.
And it really is. I mean, today, in fact, I think we get a lot of students from Brazil these days.
It
is exporting many of its middle-class students to study in America.
Right.
Let's talk about your fascination or attraction to language. You teach French and Italian.
I teach Dante, actually. I don't actually teach the Italian language, but I do medieval Italian literature.
So how did you first become attracted to learning languages to the depth that you do?
Well, I grew up in New England, and I grew up speaking English. My family was Anglophone. My grandparents were from Quebec, but they didn't speak modern Quebecois. They spoke really a dialect of Montreal that was already far removed from the modern. this dialect that's called Joual, they spoke whenever they didn't want the grandkids to know what they were saying. So, presumably when they were talking about sexual matters or something taboo. And I guess I was really inquisitive because I always wanted to know what it was that they were saying.
So how did you learn? Did they teach you any words, or did you have to learn it later?
I learned French later, but my attraction for medieval languages definitely came from that initial exposure to this almost 17th century French
And that then took you on your journey into teaching it.
That's right. That's right. And in fact, I don't just teach medieval Italian literature, but I teach medieval French literature. And every once in a while, I teach the language of medieval France, but in the southern part of France, which is Occitan. And I have a student right now. I just came from meeting with her, someone who's learning old Occitan.
How do you learn a language that most people or few people speak?
In the case of Occitan, there are lots of documents that still remain that you can use as a means of learning the language. Many of them are poetry documents, songs and such, so you can get a sense of melody, the melody of the language. Occitan is also a language that's reviving in France currently, so there are people that are trying really hard to revive the language.
So what is it like for somebody like you who teaches the languages to travel in countries where that language is being used? Is it a breeze for you to go to France or go to Italy?
It's a breeze on one level, but on the other level, on another level, it's just pure excitement because language changes so quickly and so often. And it may be that you're suddenly encountering a new kind of slang in a language that you know really well, or it may be that you're encountering a dialect in a language that you know, but you don't necessarily know the dialect. And so there's a lot of word plays that you can come up with and associations between languages that you can come up with. It's like a game.
I was going to say, it must be an adventure for you.
It is.
Being able to constantly be surprised or learn new ways.
And if you meet other people like that who have other languages, it makes playing Scrabble really fun.
I'm not playing against you, that's for sure. What about age? I've heard that if the earlier you are when you learn a language, the easier it is. Is that true, or can people pick up languages even after their early youth?
Well, I think the studies have shown that kids pick up languages more easily than adults do, but I wouldn't say that once you hit 15 that your language learning ability is over. I think once you have one or two languages down, it's a lot easier to pick up other languages.
Why is that? You would think that your brain is already full with two, to making a third or adding a third would be more difficult.
Well, I think on one hand, you learn how to learn a language. You understand how your own language works more when you've got a second or a third language. But I think also, instead of imagining our brains as empty jars in which you pour information, if you think of our brains as elastics that become more flexible with this different kind of information. It's maybe a better analogy for understanding how languages make us intellectually, but also in terms of our ourselves as beings, more flexible.
Okay. So you talked a moment ago about a student who's learning the language, a dialect of French, in by study of the literature, of documents.
Right.
Is that a more difficult way than learning conversational language just by speaking? Or is there is it a draw? Can you learn a language equally as well just from the book versus talking?
Well, given that she's working with old Occitan, nobody speaks old Occitan really in a conversational way anymore. Although there are probably two dozen that meet every May in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and you there can be conversations in old Occitan.
Probably don't need a big room for that meeting though, right?
No, but you might need a lot of wine because oftentimes people start singing. I think in terms of learning modern languages, it's always much easier to do it in a conversational way as opposed to learning from a book. This is a particular instance of a student who's working on medieval music and wants to work with primary documents.
So they'll use that. You know, they'll use that language in their other research.
That's right.
Right. So are there some languages that that you've come across that are really, really tough to learn regardless of age because of the phonetic structure, the difficulty of wrapping your tongue around some of these? Or can you attack most languages with equal fervor and perhaps equal results?
I think that you can attack most languages with equal enthusiasm. I think what your background is in languages and oftentimes will help determine the ease with which you learn other languages. French came fairly easily to me because I had this Quebecois exposure. Italian came fairly easily. Some bits of Spanish has come very easily. A couple of years ago, I decided to try to learn Hebrew. I was really interested in looking at the reception of Dante in Hebrew texts. I felt like I was six, sounding out the letters. It was a study in humility. It's an amazing language with all kinds of different metaphoric possibilities. It's very intriguing, but I found it very difficult to learn.
You know, there are some languages that I listen to, and it is as if I'm listening to a song. It's so melodic, and there's almost a wonderful set of harmonics that are involved.
Right.
I'm thinking particularly of French or Italian.
Right.
I mean, my
right.
dream someday is to learn Italian just because it sounds so wonderful.
Right.
And then there are other languages.
And you eat well.
Yeah, you do.
And you
I actually carried around in my car before my wife said trying to read this was a really bad idea on car trips when I was driving, because I'd look down and try to practice some words. But I began to imagine how cool it would be to at least be able to order off an Italian menu and order different wines and what have you. So I've got enough to just be dangerous and tell me I would like to learn more. But then there are other languages that don't have that melodic sound. You know, the more guttural sounds of the Slavic languages that seem gruffer. Is that in any way have an impact on your ability to learn the language if it sounds harsher as opposed to more melodic?
Well, I mean, I think what we determine as more melodic is really an individual and culturally determined thing, isn't it, really?
I'm Slovak, I know a few Slovak words. My parents spoke it at home, I think for the same reason your grandparents did. They didn't want us to know what was going on. And it always struck me as a more difficult language because of the way in which the vowels were pronounced.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, it seems to me like there are certain we have a really hard time making different sounds in different languages. French people have a terrible time saying the th is terrible for French. Is that a question of one language being more melodic than the other? I think it's sort of what we're exposed to initially as infants, and maybe even in utero, who knows, and what we find beautiful and what we find less beautiful. But you can still learn another language.
Got it. So at home, flipping on the TV, periodically the ads come on for Rosetta Stone, this product that tells me I can learn a language in my sleep virtually. Do those systems work, or do you have to get into a classroom setting like the one that you might be leading at the university to really understand and learn the language?
Well, I think there are lots of different ways to learn languages. For me, the interest in learning a language is learning about another culture. And the kinds of culturally specific vocabulary isn't going to come through in the Rosetta Stone because they use the exact same pictures for the different vocabulary words.
So it's a more functional way of learning, huh?
Functional way of learning, but it's also one that's predicated on certain ideas of what things are. You might have a word for umbrella in Afrikaans, and maybe people don't really, and I have no idea. We'd have to ask the provost. Maybe there are words that aren't used so often in a particular culture.
So it's the nuances that can be lost if you are getting a generic treatment of language presentation.
That's right.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. I'm Tom Lujack. Joining us in the studio is Michelle Bolduc. She's coordinator of the Master of Arts in Language, Literature, and Translation program at the university. Michelle also is an associate professor. She teaches French and Italian in literature, looking at the literature of Dante, and is here to talk about why languages are still so popular among students and, I guess, among many people who want to make sure that they sort of broaden their horizon. I mentioned talking about the program you lead that translation is also a big piece of what you mm-hmm. teach at the university. Let's switch gears and go from learning the language to the whole translational aspect of it.
The program that I coordinate is a master's in language, literature, and translation. So students can get an MA in French literature if they like. They can get an MA in German literature. But they can also get an MA in translation, which is really a professional degree. It's a completely online program. And several different tracks ranging from English to Spanish, Spanish to English, French to English, but also things like Russian to English, Japanese to English, Arabic to English.
And the purpose of those translation programs, what is it designed to prepare you to do after you finish?
Well, there are two different tracks within translation. There's a research track, which is designed to allow students to continue doctoral studies in translation. And then there's also the professional track, which trains students to become translators, whether they're translators for a particular private industry settings or in public settings.
And there are, of course, so many international companies now that have
right.
employees in countries all around the world that we presume that all of them don't speak the same language.
That's right. That's right. We have an incredible placement rate in terms of the students coming out of translation. It's about 100%. students are either going on for PhDs, but more likely are going on for employment, whether they're opening up their own businesses or whether they're opening up into jobs that are in the community or nationally or internationally. Places like Caterpillar, Johnson Controls are looking for translators.
Wow.
Looking for people who know other languages.
How intense is a translation program? Is it enough to know the basic language, or are there certain things that you have to learn in addition to the vocabulary to be an effective translator?
Well, generally speaking, you have to already have a fairly high level of language. You have to have a pretty high level of cultural understanding as well. So in terms of the nuts and bolts of the program, students have to pass a qualifying exam in order to get in.
Wow.
The program generally trains students to translate in a lot of different kinds of fields, whether it's legal or financial or scientific, technical kinds of documents. But typically students will want to specialize, right? So someone who's interested in becoming a medical interpreter is going to be doing a lot more work with medical terms than someone who is a technical translator who's working with mechanical terms.
You know, at the beginning of the program, I mentioned that in a world with Google Translate, the computer program that Google has, where you can sit down and type in one word and pick a language and see it pop out, you know, there may be some who say, well, why can't you just run it through the computer? But that is not the way the real world works, is it?
Well, I think it's the way that the real world could work in a very in a very limited sense. So if you're a tourist and you're in a place where you don't know the language and you need to know how to get to the bathroom, you can say to your Google Translator, where's the bathroom, please? And Google Translator will probably do a pretty good job. If you're wanting to work with language that's a little bit more sophisticated or technical or figurative with metaphor, working with poetry, Google Translator isn't up to it. You need a human being that has the capability and the understanding of the languages and the cultures, both the source language as well as the target language.
Do you have any students who come to America from other countries who do possess the capacity to speak their language and perhaps other languages from countries around them who don't know English well and want to make that their language? Is that part of your program at all?
Well, there certainly are students that come and are working. I'm thinking of a student of mine in particular who's from the Côte d'Ivoire who has worked in French to English translation, and how difficult that was for him because French is his first language.
And so for that person coming into the translation program, whole different set of challenges.
That's right. That's right. His English is excellent, so it wasn't that much of a problem. But
I'm intrigued when you said that that you have a virtually 100% placement rate of people going through the program. That suggests that there is a demand or need much greater than the supply that you can provide.
That's right. That's right. And UWM has one of the very few MA programs in translation around the country already. It's one of the only ones that's online. So it's very convenient for students, again, across the country.
We mentioned there are more than 20 languages that are currently being taught at UWM. Do you ever consider adding more or conversely taking one of those 20 or so off the plate because there's not enough interest in them?
Well, I would say that we really don't want to remove languages because you never know when a language might come in handy again. I mean, I think one of the interesting things around the crisis in the Ukraine recently is that after the Cold War ended, suddenly there wasn't quite as much support for Russian in academia, and now there's this realization that, oh my gosh, we don't have experts in Russian, and we really needed to have kept up our Russian programs.
So I suspect that the State Department must be knocking on your door periodically saying, we have jobs here.
Well, I don't actually know about the State Department, but the UN is definitely one of the destinations for many of our students.
Yeah. Talk about the students who are taking these programs for a moment, Michelle. Young, old, is there any typical profile or snapshot of who might be in these language programs these days?
Well, at the MA level, clearly there's students that are, you know, in their mid-20s or beyond. But sometimes in terms of translation, the students have already started a career in a completely different field. So for instance, a student that I worked with not too long ago was a nurse, has a very extensive medical background, but also had a French background and decided that she wanted to become a French to English medical translator. And finished. So it's hard to say that there's a very simple demographic of student. People are coming with all kinds of different backgrounds.
And when you see students coming in with some high school language, for example, I have a nephew who took Japanese. He went to school in Wisconsin Rapids and was able to take a Japanese course. Is that a necessary starting point, or could you walk into the university without any background in a language and still effectively be able to catch up, if you will, from those who already had a head start?
Well, I think if the student who comes in without any language background, we're very conscious of the need to do some kind of an immersion program, study abroad, at some point early on in their career, they would very easily be able to make up that ground.
So most of your students do make a trip to the country with the language that they're studying?
We really encourage students to do so.
Yeah. How do they come back after that trip? What sort of feedback do you get from them?
Well, it's life-changing for most of them, really transformative. And I think that, I mean, we know that if you're bilingual, that you have access to people in a very different way. And I think that by being in another country, learning the language in the other country, and feeling comfortable with that other language by the end of your stay, I think that the student is able to interact with a much broader segment of people, diversity of people, their ideas about the way things work and the way things should be change, which is really excellent for us as Americans to get new ideas of how to work politics and how to work our social systems.
I'm intrigued in knowing how the French or Italian, for example, react to you, an American, who possesses a really, really high proficiency in their language. Are they surprised ever?
Most of the time they are pretty surprised. The joke is, if you know two languages, you're bilingual. And if you're if you know three languages, then you're trilingual. And what are you if you only know one language? An American. I think we unfortunately have this reputation of not knowing anything but English. Although that also is not really the case. That's not really a true portrait either. There are so many Americans that know little bits of Slovak because
right.
of family heritage.
And like then, of course, all the Latinos that we have
That's
in
right.
America where Spanish may still be spoken at home
or
in the families.
Or Chinese or Vietnamese.
Right. It just keeps going. And I guess how fitting it is that UWM would have this huge number of language offerings when you think about our heritage, right? Sort of the melting pot, Milwaukee
right.
with all of these different ethnic groups.
That's right. And if you think that Milwaukee was a German-speaking city until the First World War, it's pretty amazing.
It is. And the beauty, of course, with a very diverse campus like UW-Milwaukee is we keep getting students from different parts of the world. And who knows, you might be at 25 or 30 languages as we continue to increase the number of international students here.
Well, I think that we don't have, in some ways, a very accurate count of languages since I'm teaching a language that isn't on the books, right? And it's not in the course catalog, Old Occitan. And yet you can learn Old Occitan at UW-Milwaukee.
So there you go, listeners. If you're interested in expanding your array of languages, UWM is the place to start. Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Fascinating conversation. Michelle Bolduc, who's coordinator of UWM's Master of Arts in Language, Literature, and Translation program, also a professor of French and Italian and Comparative Literature, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.